Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
You are listening to station WGN.
Whoa, a microphony!
And a phony at the mic! Yeah. Whoa!
And radio became an accepted vehicle for nationwide news and opinion.
Notify all radio and TV stations to broadcast the following message.
Oh, is that the comedy spot?
No, Bubblehead, this is a comedy spot.
You're a fun guy, Dave. You're lonely on an island.
What a dope. What a maroon.
Quiet, please. In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
This is exciting, isn't it?
10, 5, 4, 3, 2.
It is exciting. Double T Pungo.
Hey, it's Jerry Nunn.
And we're on with you until 5 a.m., filling in for the great Dave Plyer.
Nice
Curtis is producing for us. Roger Badish is hanging out for news. And, of course, Roger, as always, you can pop in whenever you like.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Good to see you again.
Good to see you.
None on the Run, running into the studios from a show. Where'd you come from?
I went and saw Showgirls the Musical at Hamburger Mary's right by my house.
How was it?
It was really fun. It's a parody on Showgirls the Musical with a big holiday twist and all kinds of fun stuff, dancing, people and reindeer. It's fun. It's a lot of fun. Very campy, you know.
I've never seen Showgirls the Musical, but I imagine it's the quintessential stereotypical Showgirls musical type show.
Well, Elizabeth Berkley was supposed to be her big movie, you know, after coming off Saved by the Bell. And so she did this movie and it killed her chances because it was so campy and over the top. And it's about, you know, competitive, you know, women dancing and stuff. So they take it to a whole new level here at Hamburger Mary's with Hell in a Handbags production. So that's running through December 30th at Mary's Attic.
Nice. So you recommend it?
It was fun. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Some really, really funny lines. And oh my gosh. Yeah, definitely. It's really good. That's good stuff.
Yeah. Well, we got an exciting show for you guys. As we talked to Lisa and Carl about just a moment ago, talking about things to do in the city, Jerry Nunn always knows everywhere to go, where to be in Chicago, everything you need to know about what to do in the city. He's also had a chance to watch a lot of these new movies that have come out. We're going to talk movies, do some movie reviews. You watch many more movies than I do, so I'm gonna lean on you for that one. But then also, one of my childhood movies is going to be remade, and it's touching a special place in my heart. So we're gonna talk about that as well. Okay. But let's go on with some things going on in the city, because usually everything is closed for the holidays, typically. But there's a lot happening right now. There's still stuff to do.
A lot of family stuff to do in the city. I mean, people need to go see. Lisa had mentioned Christmas Carol, which was like at the top of my list every year. You know, it's just a classic. It's a classic, but the Goodman Theater does such a good spin on it, and they're creative, and it's diverse. They do a lot with the cast. It's not the old time telling of the story. It's not updated. It's still the same story, but they use a very creative cast and a different spin on it. You know, sometimes they'll switch genders with some of the roles.
Oh, really?
I was going to say,
how do you spice up a story like that?
Well,
that's so
blended,
iconic.
It's a blended family this time, you know. So, I mean, they do a really nice job.
Oh, word.
Yeah. So that's through December 22nd. So that's
at the Goodman Theater.
At the Goodman Theater.
Nice, nice.
Yeah. So that's a good one that people should go see. Through the 31st, diverse cast, $75 get you in.
75.
The most expensive ticket.
I was going to say, it's nothing, just $75.
You can get them for $30 at goodmantheater.org.
Nice.
Or if you want to go cheaper, there is another Christmas Carol out at Drury Lane in Oak Brook. So that one's only $13.
So which is this one of those things where you get what you paid for? Like, which one would you recommend? What is Jerry
Goodman?
You go into the Goodman Theater.
Yeah, the Goodman is just the downtown. You know, it's a different kind of. It's been going on for so long that people need to check out that one. The other one's different because they're doing like they'll do like a. You can have a dining room experience with it at the Drury Lane, and then go see the show.
That's nice. That's really cool.
So nice family. times for people.
I was thinking about the Christmas Carol too, because a friend of mine, we do, this was pretty nerdy, but a few friends of mine, we do a chess club.
Okay.
A group of guys just get together, smoke cigars, drink, and play chess against one another and talk crap all night. And
oh,
so,
fun. Okay.
Yeah, and it actually was born out of, he's an actor, Alan Gilmore. He used to do plays at the Goodman Theater. I don't know if he's in Christmas Carol this year, but at any rate, mm-hmm. he was an understudy one year. And so backstage, just to kill time, they play chess games. And so when he was playing games against the lead, they were like, crap, I got to go. Hold on. Let me go say my lines. And then come back and finish the game.
That would be hard. I mean, I guess you're so used to doing it. You know, the part, it's like a reflex.
Yes. Yeah. It does get reflexive after a while.
Yeah, you don't have to think about it and you can run back and forth. But I don't know. That'd be distracting. Be like, oh, I should have made that move.
Yeah. That's what I don't like. Because some people, do you play chess by chance?
I mean, some.
You know how to move pieces.
I'm no
move.
Champion. I mean, I watched Searching for Bobby Fischer, you know. Did you ever see that movie?
That qualifies. It's an amazing movie.
Yeah,
yes.
They have the time. You know, they stamp that clock, you know.
Yeah,
do that?
End game.
Have you ever done that time?
With the clip? Oh, did I?
Yeah.
I'm not good at it, though.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I like those. I like those clocks.
The pressure.
Yeah, man, the pressure cooks up. I remember one of my favorite movies is Fresh, and it's a gritty film. Love that movie, Fresh, but it's based around the game of chess. And there's this alcoholic guy, and he's like a genius on the chessboard. And he says, uh-huh. "You put a clock in front of Bobby Fischer, put a clock in front of any of those guys, uh-huh. I'll eat him right up, I'll chew him right up." Because something about that clock. Uh-huh. If you're a great thinker, you can be a chess grand wizard. Uh-huh. But that the intensity, the anxiousness, when you got to hit that clock and you got 30 seconds to make that move, it kind of,
right.
I don't know, it gets
it's
you.
It's a different level. It's not, you know,
gets your adrenaline
playing
pumping.
Checkers.
Yes,
right?
Man. Yes, yes. So, but that's how I thought about Christmas Carol at the Goodman. I said, okay. Should I go? He said, yeah. He's like, either come backstage and play chess with us or actually watch the play. So it's for you. So, yeah.
Wow. I wonder what else they do backstage while they're hanging out.
I know. Hollywood. What do we do?
Behind the scenes. I'll have to go backstage and see what they're doing.
Yeah, I know. This is probably things we need to sign NDAs for before we go back.
That's
there.
Why they're not letting me backstage.
Is that what it is?
I would have a big mouth and talk about it.
Mm-hmm. That's funny, man. What else is happening?
So, Dr. Seuss, you know, is still back. He keeps coming back. Not only on the big screen with the Grinch movie, but he's also doing...
You sound so disappointed in him. Dr. Seuss keeps on coming back.
Well, he's not going away anytime soon. But they're doing How the Grinch Stole Christmas, the musical at Chicago Theater. And so that's only through November 25th, so that's about to end. It's really quick run. Mm-hmm. But I've seen that, you know, throughout the years and gone to that. And, you know, it's fun. Good time.
Yeah, how did you get so into theater, by the way? You always
In school. I went to Western Kentucky and studied performing arts, and that's why I moved to Chicago in the first place, was to
really
pursue theater and do some stuff. But I didn't realize that there was not a lot of money. And I
in theater business.
So I've done things over the years, but you know, it's just when I can do it or fit something in, or you know, little guest spot, something like that.
Right, but it's a creative passion now.
Yeah, it's like a hobby, but you know, that was my big dream, to move, you know, to a big city and try it. And Chicago was not so intimidating, you know, like
as New York.
Or, you know, California, something like that. So I did it. I've been here for 20 years.
Was money the main thing that kept you away from the industry in a real serious way?
I think, well, I mean, I wanted to do it full time. And I did do like a touring show for a while and things like that. And that was great. But, you know, it's money making for some people, and some people do really well at it. And I just wasn't at that level where I was like, you know, so I just did other things. And now I got to review it. So I still get to see the shows and have a great time. And so I have a, you know, it worked out.
Right, right.
You know? I mean, I think everyone just kind of goes on their own path.
And it just kind of shows you what's it. That's kind of like me in music, though.
Okay.
I took music very seriously for a time. Mm-hmm. Well, as seriously as any 15 or so year old can take something. But it's the reason I don't know how to play sports, basketball, or anything. Because after school, I wasn't playing sports.
Uh-huh.
My friends and I were going in our makeshift studio, and we're making music. And, you know, to make a long story short, somehow I ended up on radio. And it's the reason why I'm comfortable in front of a microphone. But it's interesting how things kind of evolve in that way.
You see the different sides to it, right? You see how it works. And then, so that's great, though.
Yeah,
it's just where life takes you, right?
Yeah. What else is popping?
So we have the Kris Kringle Market, which we talked about. So the 23rd year at the Daily Plaza, and that's open from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sunday through Thursday, and then an hour later on Friday and Saturdays. So good time to go out and get some hot chocolate. And they have a heart-shaped mug they're giving out. You can refill it with cider or hot chocolate or mulled wine, you know, because this is a German market. So, yeah.
Good stuff. A lot of fun. We're going to talk mulled wine and some other things in just a moment. It's Don T. Pongo. It's Jerry Nunn filling in for Dave Plyer on WGN.
Go to Cancun.
I know. Let's do it, man.
I went to Puerto Vallarta last year, and I just had the best time. I think you need that in like February to get through the winter.
I'm sure.
Everything. It's just so nice to just get away and recharge.
I've never been to Mexico, man.
What?
Never.
How?
I'm always working. I'm here, Jerry. Wow, that's why.
You need to get to Cancun.
I know, man. I'm cheating myself.
Yeah. I mean, it's just so tough to like, you know, around February, the weather is just like, it's, we don't get enough sun here.
Not at all.
You got to go there.
Actually, you know, I want to toss this topic around. Have you heard of this concept of seasonal depression?
I believe it.
They call it SADS. Yeah. Curtis is nodding. Curtis is, he has a Kleenex right there. You okay, bro?
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah. A little choked up.
It's tough. Choked up. He can get through it.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute, though. I was reading through these articles on ways to deal with seasonal depression, and a lot of it is because of the lack of sunlight. Uh-huh. And I lived in Minnesota for a while.
Okay.
And so, you know, you've got like 2 weeks of summer in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And you would leave to work before the sun comes up, and you would get home from work after the sun has gone down. And it really does weigh on your personality.
Which is,
I mean, it's ironic because Minnesotans are the nicest people on the planet.
Are they?
Yeah, they really are.
I don't know.
Yeah, so it's the Midwestern, the stereotype about Minnesota people are that they're so nice.
Okay.
And which is a great stereotype to have, but they really are very kind folks. You know?
I've never been to Minnesota. You've never been to Mexico. We need to get out more.
I'd gladly trade. No, I mean, Minnesota and Mexico, I'm choosing Mexico.
Yeah, but what about vitamins? What do you think about vitamins?
Vitamin D helps out.
That's what they say.
Vitamin D is... Vitamin D helps you out.
Doesn't liquor help, too? I'm just saying.
Yeah, of course. Of course it does.
Roger, I don't drink, so I got to get through it.
Okay. Well, then we have to find something else for you.
Got to find something else. Spike is water with lemon and cucumber, and that'll do it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't Beyonce have the lemonade diet or something? Maybe we could do that.
We could do the Beyonce lemonade diet. So we're jumping to that in a moment, but I want to get through some more things happening in the city.
Okay.
We didn't get through all of them yet.
All right. Well, I went to the fashion outlets with a bunch of people from WGN, and we went to meet Santa at Rosemont, and that was a lot of fun, a lot of shopping.
Nice.
And they have a whole setup there, a little interactive. I mean, it's very 2018. It's not, you know, you don't just go directly and hop on his lap. You're going through some, you know, a little maze and some fun stuff. And I was with Stephanie, who works here with her kids, and you know, hanging out with them and playing the little games before. And then by the time you're there, you're all relaxed, and you know, Santa's great. Get to meet him, take some photos.
How do you find these things?
I'm just always keep my ears open, and you know, and you get on lists. I mean, I've been in the business for 15 years, so people email me and ask me to come out and hang out with Santa, and I'm like, okay.
So you just have to be an insider, be the Jerry Nunn to get these invites.
Well, that's why I'm here, to tell people about it, you know. So
absolutely,
definitely I want to, you know, spread the word about things like that. But I hadn't really been to that outlet mall before, and there's all kinds of like Nordstrom Rack and things like that where people can get some really good deals. You just got to dig around.
Do you think the whole idea of holiday shopping is kind of passe now? And the reason I ask that question, I think, you know, with the rise of jumping online, using Amazon, being able to find deals that way, it kind of seems weird to me that they still have these doorbusters, because when you really research some of these sales, except for electronics and things like TVs, you're not getting that much of a deal on a lot of these items.
Yeah, I don't understand the whole Black Friday run out to Walmart and buy 10 TVs. Like, what are you doing with all these TVs?
What are you doing with this stuff? You know what I mean?
I don't get that part, but I personally like to go out and like touch things and try clothes on, because I don't buy my clothes on the internet like some people. I mean, that just seems so you know, if it doesn't fit right or something, I mean, I have to try it on.
Yeah, you got to feel it.
You know, I mean, it looks good on the mannequin, but I don't know how it's going to look on. So, you know, I like to actually be out there and do it.
Got you. Yeah. So, okay, so it's still alive for you. Curtis, what about
you? I was going to say, well, you talk about the deals and stuff. The deals just aren't as good as they were 5, 6, 7 years ago, I feel like. I mean, the other thing, too, is that I feel like all these retail outlets are offering, like, oh, pre-Black Friday deals. So you can get these deals before Black Friday. And with all of that being said, you're getting these deals beforehand that it just kind of takes the holiday shopping thing before, like, the big kick of crowds running to Woodfield or to Nordstrom or to wherever.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it is crazy on Friday. I would not go. I avoid those places. Like, that's just not the... And then the Cyber Monday.
What's the Cyber Monday? Then you got Cyber Monday is a thing.
Yeah.
I do find that Cyber Monday deals tend to be pretty good because, I mean, a lot of these websites, especially like these newer retailers and newer .coms, they hinge their whole year off of what they can sell pretty much in that Cyber Monday fourth quarter type of thing. But Curtis made me think of something. It's kind of risky if there's something that you really want to get, but if you wait until after the holidays, those markdowns sometimes
they're good, but everything's gone.
Everything's gone.
Yeah, I mean, really the thing that you want is gone.
Okay. For sure.
That happens with Halloween, too. Like, I was, you know, you always want to think, oh, well, after Halloween, I bet I get a good deal. But it's not there anymore.
That's
it's
long especially gone. On the candy.
Yeah.
That's where the key comes in. After you gave away all that candy to those kids in your neighborhood, now you can go back and get yourself some candy.
Right, exactly.
Get your own trick-or-treating.
And it's like candy corns, all that's left or something.
Thank you. I was debating somebody about candy corn not too long ago. It is terrible. I can't trust anyone who likes candy corn. Curtis, please tell me you don't like candy corn.
I do like candy corn.
What?
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Oh, Curtis.
Let's get a replacement in here, folks.
Hey, I'll go home and sleep. I don't mind.
Right, please.
Well, we can give him our candy corn. I mean, you can have my leftovers.
That's hilarious, man. Oh, my God. So, man, so good shopping opportunities. You guys hung out there. What else can we get into over the next few days?
What about, like, right down below us, the Maggie Daly Park skating ribbon where you can skate around?
Oh, yeah,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, so that's opened at the middle of November. And that's at the Maggie Daly Park, Randolph Street, right here. It's a free skate rental, but it's $12, I guess, to skate Monday through Thursday, $14 Friday through Sunday and the holidays. And it's just like right here under the city where you're getting to skate and have a great time. And they have places where you can get hot chocolate and get your skates and all that stuff. So
nice.
MaggieDailyPark.com. Things to do and see.
You would not believe this, but I used to ice skate.
What?
My dad had us in ice skating when I was like 8 years old. 8 to like, I think 9 or 10.
Okay.
And then I went into that adolescent thing when I said, I don't want to ice skate. I want to go tackle people. I want to play football or something. But yeah, I used to figure skate, man.
Really?
And hockey was too expensive for my dad to buy the equipment and the pads and all of that stuff. But but yeah, man.
So you could ice skate.
Huh. I don't know if I could.
A double faxel. What is it?
Yeah, all of that good stuff.
Yeah, the Tanya Harding. What's that?
The class, the last time I skated was at the United Center with WGN Radio.
Oh.
That's when the and
so then, does it come back like a bicycle?
It's just like riding a bike.
Okay.
So like almost exactly like riding a bike.
So I never could do it, so it's never coming back.
Yeah, it's not happening for you. And I can't, but it's odd because I gotten so used to ice skating, I'm not good at skating like regular roller skating in a rink.
Oh, really?
I don't know. It feels weird.
Huh.
It feels weird. The gliding, it's much more smoother on the ice. You can glide and move around, but then most of my friends are roller skaters. I mean, they're the kind like, I don't know if you ever seen
roller derby?
Like, oh, I wish.
Knock you down.
Yeah, no, I wish. They're more like roll bounce. The movie with a little bow wow. Yeah, so.
Yeah, okay. But yeah, that ice.
I'm telling you,
it's a whole different ball game.
Before we run the break, we've got a caller on the Black Friday issue, Patrick from Rolling Meadows. Black Friday, what say you about the craziness with shopping? Do you think Black Friday is still relevant? Does it still matter, Patrick?
I don't know if it's relevant, but I do heating and air conditioning, and I was doing a service call at Woodfield Mall, and it was packed. I mean, there was not one parking spot available. Being that I do heating and air conditioning, I got to park up right up against the building. I'm going to post a video on at WGN later today.
Thank you.
I had to go into the mall, and it was, you know, I've lived here all my life, and it was crazy packed, and I don't get it. Everybody's seen those videos on the, you know, how the, I don't know if it's Walmart, but how they have those crazy sales on those TVs, and everybody's going crazy on them. Mm-hmm. And those TVs are the cheapest TVs that they have. And it's like, hey, right. You're getting it, you know? I mean, they have that 4HD or whatever it is now, and but the TVs that they're on sale for are like the bottom line, flat screens. But either way, it's crazy that these people act the way they do, especially like you guys said, with the online options and the sales and whatnot. It's kind of crazy, but again, you guys are doing a great job. Love the show.
Oh, thanks.
Have a good night.
Thank you, Patrick. You have a good night. No, he's right, man. Yeah. It surprises the mess out of you when you look at how many people are still at these places. But and it's always the worst TVs because the strategy is just to get you in the door,
right?
So that you shop around and get other.
I
things.
Mean, do they have a TV in every room? Is it in the bathroom, the kitchen?
Where are people putting the TVs?
I don't know.
Which is funny. I've got two TVs, but I don't have cable. Mm. I just got an antenna to watch local television, like. 2 months
like
ago.
The rabbit ears with the tinfoil?
They don't look like that anymore, but yes. Yes. Okay. More right. Like aerodynamic and sleek.
Yeah. I was at Old Orchard on Friday to go to the movies, and it was crazy. People are vicious with those parking spaces, like he was saying.
Oh, it's gangster. People ain't playing with you in these parking spaces,
you do not
want to
cut somebody off. They will key your car and who knows what else. Flatten your tires.
Well, if we're late for news, Roger will do the same thing. So we've got a break and we'll be back.
I ain't keying anyone's car or flattening anyone. Everyone's tired. Trust me.
You say that now. Wait until 2:32. We'll see how you feel. Okay. It's Jerry Nunn, Dover T on WGN. It's 2:38. It's Dumb and T Pongo, Jerry Nunn. Yo, Curtis, who is this right here? What are we listening to?
Greta Van Fleet.
Oh, yeah. I got to interview them this summer at Lollapalooza.
Did you? How was that?
I was with Mike Heidemann. You know Mike Heidemann?
Yeah.
Just hanging out with the band.
So is that the band? I remember he reposted. Mm-hmm. One of the bands posted. Just got done doing a really cool interview with Mike Heidemann. Yeah. And then he reposted. He went crazy. I was so happy for him. I think that was the...
They're really good. They sound like Led Zeppelin, right? I mean, that's the whole thing.
That's what kind of threw me. Because, you know, that I usually don't listen to rock. But I'm like, this sounds really familiar. But I haven't heard it before.
Yeah.
Probably because it's reminiscent. Of Led Zeppelin.
Yeah. That's a big thing.
Michael J. Foxy. Shout out to Michael Heidemann, who's a producer here, who also performs as Michael J. Foxy. He has a set every Saturday night, and he's performing somewhere across Chicago right now. Either that, or he's drunk and recovering. So
shout out to show Michael. Party.
Yeah.
He's a good guy. But yeah, we hung out in Lollapalooza this summer, and I helped him with his interview. So it's fun.
That is awesome, man. Yeah. When you talk to bands immediately after they come off of stage, what are you asking them and what are you thinking about as far as questions go? Because there are certain standard questions that get asked usually, especially if you don't know the band, but I'm sure you're familiar with them and you knew them.
I do a lot of research, actually.
Beforehand,
and stuff. I don't like to just wing it because I feel very like, you know, I don't know exactly what to say sometimes.
Yeah, and people can tell.
I know. Yeah. Because the questions are so light if you're winging it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, how'd it go on stage? You know, like, but, you know, so you want to really think outside the box, I think, with people because... Sometimes people don't like to do interviews, you know, and you want to be respectful of their time and not just be like, oh, great job. Or you know, you never say like, I'm a big fan, because then you're like a fan.
Right.
But you want to think of like interesting ways to start like a good conversation, I think. So, but yeah, Lollapalooza, I think I did probably like 10 interviews out there. It's a good, awesome. A good chance to.
So a lot of research you had to do. Yeah. Do you find that when you research an artist and you bring up some of those lesser known facts that they kind of warm up in a way that they didn't expect? Because I found that sometimes when I interview folks and I bring up, you know, wait, you saw that? Like, they're like, you saw that song I did in 2006 that, you know, didn't sell anything? You heard that? Yeah, you know.
Yeah, I was talking to, like, a pop singer that was out there, and somehow we started talking about RuPaul's Drag Race, and then we just went down that rabbit hole and talking about drag queens the whole time. So, you know, I don't know if it's interesting to other people, but to us, we had a great time talking about drag queens, so you just never know where it's going
to
take you.
Yeah, well, when it's exciting to the person, you know, it jumps off the screen and it makes folks want to watch it, so you know, it always works.
Yeah, and that artist posted it everywhere, and it went all over the place, so you never know.
That's good stuff, man. Well, I was thinking about this earlier, and we talked about this when we opened the show a little bit, about seasonal depression and about how this happens in the winter. And I found this article on muscleandfitness.com. I have no muscle, nor do I care much about fitness, so I don't know how I ended up on this website, but digging through the rabbit hole of the internet, I somehow ended up on this article about the best ways to fight against seasonal affective disorder, or SAD.
That's what they call it. So the endorphins, I guess, from working out would help a lot.
You already knew. That was number one. Oh. Number one was moving the body can increase the release of feel-good endorphins and other hormones that can support an improved mood.
Okay, I got my treadmill at home, so I will be doing that this winter.
Right, okay. And it's this phenomenon that the doctors talk about, you know, as it turns colder, the days get shorter, the sun, which gives you vitamin D, and overall just the usual sense of euphoria when you wake up and you see the sun shining. You miss that during the winter times, and that was the worst part of me living in Minnesota. At the time, I was working at Target headquarters, doing a really boring corporate job with some really great people, but I hated the job.
Mm-hmm.
And going to work when it's dark, coming home when it's dark, really messes with your mental more than you would think, man. More than I, you know, at least I thought it would.
Yeah, my cousin, she was, her husband got stationed in Alaska, and that was just too tough for her. They had to get out. I mean, they just could not take how dark it was all the time, you know. And then you have sunlight at like 11:30 at night.
Yeah,
it's really,
yeah.
It's really, I mean, Alaska will really mess with
you. I didn't know that. Sunlight at 11:30 at night.
Yeah, they have their daytimes and everything's all switched.
Is that why Sarah Palin is so off kilter?
Probably.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, those moose up there.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, so she had to move away.
But I mean, dealing with issues like that, like how did you, when you are not in the in the best of times, or what are some things that you do to pull yourself out of?
Well, I'll tell you, I'll be real honest with you. Like, Thanksgiving was tough for me this time.
Really?
My family doesn't live here. They were actually visiting that cousin down in Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wasn't with my family. And then I was like, well, what am I going to do? Because it's such like a family day, right?
Right.
And my friends are all off doing their own thing. Single guy here. I'm just like, what am I going to do that day? And I was really in a funk. Like, I was just not doing well. And I was like, you know, I'm going to decorate the Christmas tree. And I went down and got my Christmas tree out of storage and got out all the ornaments, got all the stuff. And it totally worked. I snapped out of it.
Wow.
I got in a total different mood. And then my friend had asked me to come over and, you know, have some turkey with his family. At first, I wasn't going to do it because it's like family time. But I was like, you know, I was like, I'm getting out of the house. I'm going to go do that. And it was so great. And we went over there and played games and had food. And it just changed my whole day.
That's really cool. Kind of was it the fact that you just got your hands busy, or did you feel like you were clearing? Yeah, just getting busy.
Yeah, and just, you know, you play some music, holiday music, and kind of just change it up.
That's good, man. I was a few years ago, man. I had interviewed someone talking about feng shui and about how shifting the energy and the spaces in a room.
Okay.
I'm going to get into some real like esoteric yogi stuff. Okay. You guys don't change the station. I promise. I won't stay here long. but it allows your energy to flow differently. It can also, if you have a cluttered space, it can give you a cluttered mind. So for me, it's cleaning up, and I have this thing where I've got articles and papers, and I still like old newspapers that I can touch and handle. Mm-hmm. And they're strewn all over my room, all over my office space, my little home office, and microphone cords everywhere. Uh-huh. Whenever I feel, when I get kind of in one of those funks, for me, it's the cleaning, but I didn't think about the fact that my hands were busy with making me happy, but it's also the clearing of the space that allows your energy to flow a little bit more freely.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And it was like that. I mean, I had to have clutter everywhere and just cleaned it up. That's so true. I think that's really true.
And you also put up the lights and ornaments, which also is number two. You got this thing figured out. Number two is try light therapy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it says get some sunlight if you can, Or, failing that, try a light box, which will increase your exposure to light during the darker months. And then it gets real specific. You can find a light box that filters out UV rays, and you aim to get 20 minutes to an hour of white light each day at a strength of 10,000 lux. Okay, that's really specific.
Yeah.
But essentially, find a light box to give you that light source.
How much do these cost, these light boxes?
Let me look this up. Hold on.
You gotta look up a light box.
Look up a light box. I need a light box. Let's see if we get a Cyber Monday deal.
It does not sound cheap.
At all, especially if you got to know, I don't even remember lux and joules and all of these scientific terms.
Yeah.
Talk about light and energy. Let's see how much a light box is. Well, there's one for $40.
Yeah, you can get Amazon. Mm-hmm.
Yep, a $90 one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're not too expensive.
So you can get the high end or the low end.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can.
Okay.
You know, light does it. I didn't know light factored so much into our psyche.
Well, you don't know it till it's gone, right? Then you're like,
that's true. Yeah. when it's missing, you realize how much What are you a decorator when it comes to Christmas and things like that?
Oh,
like,
yeah. Yeah.
Really?
I'll be decorating the Tribune office on Monday and getting the tree out. And
your face is almost like, how dare you ask me that?
I know. What? I mean, you know about my Halloween. So, you know, the holiday is.
And I missed your Halloween party. How was that, by the way? I had to go to a costume party with my girlfriend, man. She dragged me out that night, man.
Yeah. A bunch of WGN people came.
I know.
That was fun.
I know. I was really jealous and upset. I actually planned to come.
Yeah.
And but the other party I had to go to was in the south suburbs, all the way in Homewood, Flossmoor. So
okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's far.
Yeah. And you're on the north side, right?
Yeah, I'm on the north side in Andersonville. But you know, I have my birthday party coming up. So
when's your birthday?
January 16th. I'm Capricorn.
Let's do it. Are you the day after? Like, is that Dr. King's birthday or something? That's pretty legit.
Right.
Hold on. I'm putting this
my mom's birthday's in. Yeah, but I'll do a party there, and we're gonna the theme is gonna be blue. Everyone has to dress blue this year.
Okay,
and
so you're really festive, like you're a holiday.
Yeah, why not? I mean, well, why wouldn't you?
I love it, man. Well, we three more ways for you to deal with SAD, the seasonal affective disorder. Coming up in just a second on the other side of the break. Music is a good way to deal with SAD.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Holiday music, anything like that, too.
What's a song that you... Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, anything that, you know, gets you going.
What song gets you excited, brightens your mood, no matter what?
Oh, that's a good question. Let's see. What am I listening to even right now? I've been like... This girl named Jess Glynn I'm super into right now. Ariana Grande's been, I've been listening to that a lot.
That Thank Me song? Thank You song?
Yeah, Thank You
Thank You Next.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan, bro.
Really?
I don't know.
Something about it I really like.
Apparently, I'm the only person on this side of the planet that is not a fan, but it's been going viral. It's a song where she thanks her ex-boyfriend
her ex. She names names.
Does she?
Yeah.
So she's naming like Pete and Mac Miller. And...
Yeah. There's something about it because I think it's cathartic for her. And then I think for the listener, too, you're just like, oh, you think about your exes, right? I mean.
Yeah.
Maybe just think about the words. Maybe if you don't like her. But I like her.
I'm a fan of her as a person.
Yeah, I went to a little intimate show that he was at, you know, and her mom was there.
That who was that? Pete?
Pete was there. She was there. It was her listening party for this album, the Sweetener album, at the Vic. Little small venue.
Yeah,
and she just sat on a stool in a sweatshirt with her long ponytail and laughed the whole time and joked with the audience and asked them what they wanted to hear. And she was adorable.
That is awesome. By the way, the Pete we're talking about is if we know him personally. Well, I don't know him, Jerry Bike. But Pete Davidson from Saturday Night Live, who dated Ariana Grande. And Ariana was on Jimmy Fallon.
Okay.
And they do the a lip sync challenge type of thing where he pulls up. He has this thing where it pulls up at random. singers, mm-hmm. and his guest has to impersonate the singer. So it'll pull up like Christina Aguilera,
right.
and Ariana Grande has to impersonate Christina Aguilera, uh-huh. and she hit it on the head. Like, yeah. Ariana is an amazing songstress, and because yeah. she's a pop singer, I think sometimes we forget that. Same with mm-hmm. Lady Gaga, another amazing songstress,
yeah.
And vocalist, but because they make pop music, mm-hmm. at least I forget that they really know how to sing.
So it sounds like you still like her. You're just not, the,
yeah,
song,
like
the song doesn't work for you the for some reason.
No, the yeah. song is too poppy.
Okay.
It sounds like it was made in like a song. I know, right? It sounds like it was written in like a songwriting factory. It's like, quick, we need a song about Thanksgiving. Thank you.
No, it didn't feel like that to me. It felt like it's really? Off the cuff that she was going through it on a weekend and popped it out, you know, to deal with it.
Let's see. Okay. This is what we, Curtis, we'll do this. I'm going to tell you at in the 3 o'clock hour. Well, I'll tell you now. My song that makes me happy is Living It Up by Damian Marley. And then his song is the Thank You Next by Ariana Grande. And so we got to come back from break in the 3 o'clock hour. You can play mine, and then after that, at 3:30 before the news, we'll play Ariana Grande, and we'll see which one makes Curtis happier.
Okay.
Challenge.
Let's do it. Perfect. Okay.
But no, we've been talking about seasonal affective disorder, SAD, which is a disorder that you get from winter weather in the winter months. The lack of sunlight, the weather, all of these things can make you extremely sad. And they gave a few ways to get through that. Jerry knew them already. Exercise. You said try mm-hmm. light therapy mm-hmm. inadvertently, but you said mm-hmm. it, which was perfect. What would you guess the third one would be?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. We said cleaning, right?
Okay. We said cleaning.
Something will snap you out of it. Maybe like a good walk outside. I don't know.
Well, walking it out could work. This one says talking it out.
It's like call a friend?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. It says employ a little cognitive behavioral therapy is what uh-huh. they say,
okay.
which means basically through talking, mindfulness, and general awareness of the situation, you can recognize and then mitigate the impact of seasonal depression.
Uh-huh. That totally works for me.
Calling folks.
Yeah.
Who do you call, and what do you, how do you talk through
well,
it?
Well, you can call my southern mom at any time of the day, except, well, not after 10 p.m. She goes to bed. But, you know, I can always reach her. You know, she'll try to answer the phone if she can find her flip phone in her country home. But, you know, I call her sometimes, or, you know, you have your regular friends. There's also an app called Marco Polo that I love now.
This really?
An app called Marco Polo, and you make little videos just uh-huh. whenever you have time. So it could be any hour of the day, and it goes to your friend, and then they send you one back. And it's a really good way to keep in touch with people. And you can talk about anything, of course, because it's your own video.
That's cool.
And you have it. I love that app.
I haven't heard of it.
Kind of like Snapchat?
Yeah, but it's just between you and them. It's just one.
It's one app. To one.
Yeah.
But it's not like a.
And you can add people on there, but yeah. I mean,
because Snapchat is so busy now.
Yeah, I don't do the Snapchat at all.
Me neither. I quit Snapchat.
But this is like a real handy little thing to just. And I keep in touch with people that are really busy, you know, because everyone's so busy these days. Busy. I got stuff to do. I've got to go. And the people are running around, and this is a great time to wait to keep in touch.
I love that, though, too, because, you know, we're talking about world travel earlier. And one thing about America, it's too busy, too much mm-hmm. busyness. We're always running. We're always, and it clouds the mind. It stresses you out. So having a moment, even if you have an app to just pause, mm-hmm. make a video, send it to a friend or a loved one, let them know you're thinking about them, or just show them, share a funny joke.
Yeah.
And being able to pull that up in your free time, that's got to be valuable, man.
Yeah, I was surprised how much I liked it. I thought I was like, what is this? And then, I mean, now I'm like really good, back in touch with my best friend, and we talk all the time now. And she's got kids and family and, you know, a business she runs, and now she's on her way to work.
That's
drive
awesome.
In the car, make a video.
That's awesome. You seem really open, but, like, for myself, I have a hard time talking about my problems.
Like reaching out to people.
Yeah, I'm good at reaching out. Mm-hmm. I won't get real specific about what I'm going through sometimes.
Okay.
Except with a select few. You know, and it's mostly because in my friend circle, I'm the ear. You know what I mean? I'm the one who has the advice. Yeah. Not that I'm perfect or follow my own advice. Yeah. I just read a lot of stuff. So,
okay.
You know, I'll be talking to a friend and say, oh, you're depressed. You should probably work out. I read an article about it. You know, I'm that guy.
Right.
So
right.
people usually unload on me
mm-hmm.
and I just, you know, share that stuff. But I never really share what I'm going through, which is something I need to work on.
I
never really like talking.
You got to take care of yourself before you take care of other people. No, it's true.
Shelf schmelf.
It's true. You can't, you know, what do they say? Seatbelt yourself in first and then the baby?
Yeah. Just let the babies deal with oxygen problem. I always thought that rule was cruel to the babies.
Well, you got to take care of yourself. That's important.
We got another one. You guessed this one already.
Mm-hmm.
Get plenty of vitamin D.
Yes.
How did you know that vitamin D helps out with depression?
I've just heard that. I need to get back on the vitamins, I think. My doctor said, you know, you don't really need to do that, but whatever.
Oh, he said you don't need multivitamins?
Yeah, he wasn't into the vitamin thing.
Gotcha. Mm-mm. Your doctor is not into the vitamin thing? Isn't that his job to be into vitamin
things? Not vitamins. I mean,
he wants you to get them from food naturally. Is that
Yeah. Right? I guess you eat correctly. Eat correctly. We'll get you the right vitamins, right?
That would do it. Yeah. I think there is a bit of a placebo effect that I'm not opposed to that happens when you take vitamins. Take a vitamin, I'm like, oh, I feel great. I don't even know if I really feel great or if it's just in my mind, but it works for me.
And they're confusing. There's so many.
Yeah.
Do you take the multivitamin or what do you do?
I used to do the men's one a day.
Okay.
Lately, I've been drinking like teas with these supplements that are supposed to be good for you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, different things like lavender tea, and then you got the I'm trying to wean myself off of caffeine, except for right now I'm drinking some coffee now. But I drink a lot of these different teas that have different supplements, and it's supposed to help you out and counteract different things, and detox teas and things like
whatever
that.
Whatever works.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know if any of it works, but in my mind, it makes me feel better.
I think that's what my doctor was saying. I don't know how much some of this works, but...
Yeah. Then they also say, which is going along with talking to folks, but ask for help, man. When your ability to engage in daily activities diminishes or your mood leads to feelings of hopelessness or pronounced sadness, it's critical to seek medical attention. Mm-hmm. So something else.
Mm-hmm.
Something else to think about, man. Jerry Nunn, Domiti Pongo with you until 5 a.m. Hey, in just a moment, we're going to talk about some of the movies that Jerry has seen that he thinks you need to see. And I've seen the trailer for Lion King, and I have a few problems with it. We'll talk about it in just a second on WGN.
Everything the light touches is our kingdom. But a king's time as ruler rises and falls like the sun. One day, the sun will set on my time here and will rise with you as the new king.
Wow. That was wild.
How do you not have chills right now, man?
Yeah, people are so into the trailer for that.
Yeah.
Talk about, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how I feel about CGI Lion King, though, man.
Mm.
So, for you guys who haven't seen it, of course, that was a trailer for Lion King. They're doing a remake of Lion King, the original Lion King that so touched our hearts and lives and shaped my childhood. It was a cartoon.
Yeah.
But the new Lion King is a live-action Lion King, as Roger said earlier today. Live-action Lion King, which basically means it's CGI, and these look like actual talking animals.
Right.
If you look at the things.
Yeah, so it's when like
you
first Book.
Saw, yeah, like Jungle Book. What did you think when you first saw the trailer for this new Lion King?
I mean, I like Beyonce, but you know those Beyonce fans were going crazy when they showed her name, and you know they're all going to be at the front row, you know, the Beehive. Yeah. So,
Beyonce is playing Nala, who is what is that, Simba's love interest,
right?
Yeah, and Donald Glover
is
here. There was an outrage online about the fact that it was CGI because they don't have to pay the original animators of the film, and animators make so much money. The people who actually draw the cartoons, and
right?
All of this type.
But that's
of stuff.
A different project.
It's a different project. It's a different thing. Yeah. So you know, people find ways.
Supposed to carry them along, you know, just cause.
See, look, you're cutthroat. One of those cutthroat showbiz guys.
Well, I mean, it's a different thing. I don't know why they would have to. owe anything to people that have created it before.
And I do think if you're going to remake something, because Hollywood remakes everything, I do believe if you remake something to add your, to contribute to art, mm-hmm. you have to do something different. You got to do something new. You got to liven it
up. Your own spin. It's just like a cover song, right?
Yes.
You don't want to do the exact same version.
Exactly.
Right.
But I did feel, it did feel too real. Like, okay. it felt like I was looking at a video game. Like, I felt like I was looking at NBA 2K creative player mode.
That bothers me. I mean, that Justice League was a video game. It was not a movie.
Did you? Yeah.
I did not like that. I don't like when it's, I mean, it's just not real to me. It doesn't ground me in reality. It's just too far out.
It's too far out, man. Mm-hmm. And that looking at, I don't know, looking at it, it was really cool and it looked like an experience and mm-hmm. I'm definitely going to see it. Taking my nieces and my nephew to see it.
Okay.
So I will see it. But
you should.
The old man in me is like, I remember when cartoons were cartoons. And for that take, Roger Badish, what do you think about the live action?
I remember when we used to have to turn a handle to see the pictures move. I'm excited for this, first of all, because I love Lion King. Mm-hmm. My kids were little when it came out, and you know, we got the story on, hold on to your seats, cassette. The storybook, you know, Disney puts out the storybook with a cassette tape, or used to, now it's CDs or digital, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. But the same director, as Jerry mentioned, the same director of the remake of The Jungle Book is doing this, and I fell in love with the beginning and all parts of the remake of The Jungle Book, the CGI. I didn't see it in the theaters. I saw it on Amazon Prime, and I got the version that shows, you know, the extras at the end. So mm-hmm. you got to see all the special effects and how they did everything. Okay. And it's just amazing.
That's really
but
cool.
But being an old Disney kid, mm-hmm. when they came up with the opening, the traditional opening of, the Disney castle with Tinkerbell flying over and waving her wand, and then coming down the river and having that cartoon river turn into a very real-looking river in the jungle, I was blown away. And I'm expecting that same type of effect from the movie. Now, I have seen the trailer, just like you said you saw the trailer. Mm-hmm. I didn't see anything new, like you said. In fact, someone came out on YouTube with the comparison, the cartoon with the CGI version.
I'm tweeting it out, by the way, if you guys are on Twitter, Dometi, D-O-M-E-T-I _, tweeting it out so you guys can see what it looks like. But yeah, like you said, it's shot by shot, right? The exact same thing.
Exactly shot by shot. And I'm like, all right, can we have a little something? We know the story. Give me something better.
Yeah, like their own take on it.
Exactly. Yeah. Give me, go ahead and tell the same story. But give me something better. Give me a twist on this. Give me a, I don't know.
But does Hollywood ever give us a twist on any remake? I mean, honestly.
No.
It's all the same thing.
You know, Star is Born. My God, what is it, like the 10,000th remake of that?
Right.
I mean, it's, you know, and everyone's going crazy over that. And I get it. You've got some really dynamic stars in there that are performing. It's a tightly shot video, tightly edited. There's no waste in it, and they go for the tear ducts at the end. But you know what? It's the same story, and everybody thinks it's the greatest thing since chopped liver, and that's never been done before. It has been done before. People have seen the original version, know exactly how this one's going to end.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're making it for a younger audience,
exactly, for, you know, that's and that's the thing. How old is the original?
1994.
Okay, so you have a whole new generation that has never seen it. I've tried to show the grandkids who are in fifth and third grade mm-hmm. now. Mm-hmm. And I've tried to show them some of the Disney cartoons that we showed our kids when they were their age. And they loved them then. But now they watch it, they're bored with them. Right. And wow. I don't know if it's because of CGI. I don't know if it's because of these internet games that you can play now that weren't around back then.
Oh, yeah, kids today. They're not even. I just said kids today. I can't believe it. Kids today, though.
Grandpa over here.
Kids today. Right. They're not even watching movies. They're watching YouTube. And they watch these weird YouTube videos, different cartoons.
And the quality is just going to be different. So they're like, this is some old
exactly.
game.
Exactly. So I think that's why they're doing this. First of all, Disney can make money out of this. All right. And as you said, they're paying CGI artists to do this. They're not paying actors. You know, they're not taking a lot of time in the studio.
We're paying the voice actors, you know.
Well, I understand that, but they're not in front of the camera.
Yeah, you're getting them at a fraction.
It's a different fee for that. So, and it's going to be a different feel, but it's a different audience nowadays.
That's true.
I can understand that. And if Disney is out to, for all the right and wrong reasons, to make as much money as they can from their properties, and they have a boatload of them, then God bless them.
Yeah, if something works, you do it again. Like, I don't know, Jerry Nunn and Doma T hosting. If it works, do it again. Let them keep doing it. So, you know.
Yeah, that's true, though. That's what they keep doing. They don't know when to end a TV series. Let's just keep rebooting it and have them come back again and again and again.
Right. You know, I mean, I think same with Fast and Furious 8 and 9 and whatever number we're on. They're just going to keep doing whatever works.
And if you've seen every single movie, what happens? The same thing.
They race. Right,
Someone's kidnapped. Let's put it on an airplane. Let's put it on a lost land that someone finds under the ocean.
But I do think there is value in retelling these stories, though. And you made me really think of this, Raj. I'm coming around now. Because I do think there's value in a story like Lion King being retold.
Well, when it came out, it was a blockbuster movie.
Yes.
It's going to really be again. It really was. Mm-hmm. So if they figure it made money then, let's tell the same story, let's upgrade the graphics, and let's see if the kids today will go for it.
Jerry, your thoughts. Are remakes overdone, or do they invite a new audience to an old classic and actually keep the legacy of that classic alive?
Oh, I like that, though. The legacy. I like that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of sequels in the summer, things like that. I don't think it's a bad thing, you know. It's just people get frustrated because they want something fresh and new, right?
Right.
So they're like, oh,
especially if we've seen it before. It was but at least there's something new with this. I mean, and especially I want to hear, because I remember who was it? I think it was Jason Weaver, a well-known actor, especially if you watched like black sitcoms in the 90s and those random releases on Netflix. You see a lot of Jason Weaver, but he played Simba in the first Lion King. But you want to see how Adonis Glover is going to do in this film. Like, you want to hear, I love Beyonce in voiceover movies. Like, what was she in? Princess and the Frog, or the one with Princess Tiana?
Oh, right. Yeah, that. Yeah.
Yeah, she was in that too for like 2 seconds. But it really is exciting to hear like some of your favorite actors and actresses kind of, you know, morph into these characters as cartoons.
And that's going to bring in a different audience, so might be good.
Yeah, it could be good stuff. I think we got to go to break. Do we got something right here? Yes, and we'll be right back in a moment. It's Doma T. Pongo, Jerry Nunn, filling in for Dave Plyer on WGN Radio. Hey, when we get back, I want to talk about not only movie reviews, but what movies did not deserve to be remade? Which ones should they have left alone? You could text us at 312-981-7200. If you're still up, if you're driving, call us in, but use a hands-free device. Be safe out there, people. It's WGN. This is my happy song right here, Jerry. This is the one I was talking about.
Okay.
Wait till it drops. Curtis, wait till it drops. This is by Damian Marley.
My daddy made it up out of the ghetto.
This makes you smack. You feel that? Do you feel the sun rays right now, Jerry?
I do. I mean, Ziggy Marley, I've seen concerts so many times. He's always happy.
Yes.
Something about Jamaica is just making people happy.
It does. We're having a good time, baby. We certainly are. We're having a good time filling in for Dave Plyer, who's out enjoying the holiday. But you got me and Jerry until 5 a.m. And we're talking about movies that did not deserve a remake, or rather this whole idea that movies get remade too often. I'm really enjoying this conversation about Lion King because I do want to see it. I'm excited about it. It's CGI. It's not cartoon anymore. But I'm wondering if we overdo it with the remakes in Hollywood, man.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, The Grinch, still more cartoons with The Grinch. And Creed 2 is out. So this Rocky franchise is just going on and on and on.
True. But it's at least Creed was a spinoff. Mm-hmm. Well, it's really the same movie, but it's a spinoff.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, Sylvester Stallone's still in it.
Yeah, 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 he's still kicking, he's still in
around.
It. That's true. And then it's like, and the story isn't that far-fetched, but it's kind of funny that all of Rocky Balboa's enemies had sons.
Yeah, they just keep going.
That are the same age.
The Energizer Bunny.
And in the same fighting, what is it, weight class. Like, it's just so perfect.
I know. And then the music, talk about inspiring music, you know, that's a classic.
I'm telling you, man. Yo, I'm thinking about movies that didn't deserve a remake.
Okay.
I really like the new Planet of the Apes.
Okay.
But some folks say Planet of the Apes did not deserve a remake. What say you?
I was into it, the James Franco, right, at the beginning of the retelling of it.
Yes.
And then it's just been so, I mean, each movie, and then there's these years breaks, and you're like, oh my gosh, here comes another one. And you just kind of lose interest.
Yeah.
It's too many.
But it's another one of those live action type things, man. Uh-huh. Those animals looked real in Planet of the Apes.
Yeah,
man.
Compared to the old, you know, the old ones.
Where they had just the mask 70s. Going with the perms and the
right.
beards.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't know. It's another one. Let me see. Carrie came out in 1976 based on the Stephen King novel. And then you had the remake in 2013. And it flopped hard. I don't even remember the 2013 remake.
It was Julianne Moore was the mother. Yeah, and I know it was for a new generation, and it didn't work at all. The old version's so good still, right? Still holds up. Sissy Spacek and the old Carrie.
It still creeps me out, man.
Yeah,
I can't watch.
I felt like I lived that life because I was, you know, trapped in the closet by a religious mother growing up. So I felt like, you know, Jerry. Except it was Carrie, you know. It's like, it was a tough, she had a tough life, that girl.
She did.
Bullied in school, you know. I identified a lot with that. I mean, that movie was.
Was high school rough?
Hit a lot of notes for me, yes.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
I was in the South, gay in the South, and like, oh yeah, that was not.
With a Christian mom.
It was not fun, yes. You know, you'd come home and get berated with Bible verses. I mean, it's just, really. And so, you know that Stephen King, he had thrown that book in the trash, and his wife rescued it.
Really?
Tabitha King pulled it out of the trash and said, this is pretty good, you should look at this again. And so it would have never been out. It would have never been made.
So when you have a movie that you connect with so deeply,
mm-hmm.
and then they touch it and they mess it up
right
in 2013, how do you feel, man? Like, you don't care.
It's almost kind of ignored. I mean, people weren't, you know, if people weren't into it, then the original is still good to watch.
We got a call in. I'm so glad she's up with us. We've got Linda on the Southeast side, and she's got three movies that didn't deserve a remake. What say you, Linda?
Hey, Steel Magnolias. There was such a disappointment with that remake.
With Queen Latifah?
I mean, the original, I mean, nobody can overdo that one.
I know it.
I know, that was a classic.
Dirty Dancing.
Dirty
the remake on that.
I remember people being really excited about it. When it came out, it wasn't good, Linda? What did it look like?
No. They had different actors in that, and it just didn't have the same energy as the original one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just disappointing all the way. And the other one was a movie that maybe a lot of people didn't see called Endless Love. The original from the book, and that was very, very good. In fact, I know the author of the book.
Oh, wow.
He's right here from the south side of Chicago.
Oh, nice.
And they made a remake on it of, like, teenagers that are supposed to be in the one kid from the wrong side of the tracks and that. It just didn't do it. Yeah, it didn't have anything to really relate to the original story.
Got it. Well, thank you, Linda. You know, you're right about this, too. Endless Love on Rotten Tomatoes got 16%.
Ouch.
16. It was that bad. That wouldn't even, that's like not answering any questions on a test. 16%. Right. That is terrible.
Yeah. I don't know.
And in fact, the original, that song, mm-hmm. I mean, hit the top charts.
Right, Diana Ross.
And with this, I mean, that remake, I didn't even finish watching it. It was so bad. And the same with the Dirty Dancing. Mm-hmm. And like I said, with Steel Magnolias, mm-hmm. I mean, the three original ladies in it, there was no matching them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dolly Parton.
Weezer.
Yeah, Weezer. I mean, that was really funny. And, she was the flying nun. I can't
Sally
think
Field.
Of her name right.
Sally Field.
Sally Field, yeah. You just couldn't take away from them. There's others that, you know, there's probably out there, but those three popped right away.
Oh, yeah.
Yo, before we let you go, Linda, what films, then, are you looking forward to right now? What's out right now that have you getting out the bed right now and going to go see it?
Gee, I don't know. I can't think of one right now.
That's because they made all the good movies back in the day.
Really? And I'll tell you, we watch on our cable that Turner Classics. Mm-hmm. And you see some of those movies, they're so funny because now the way they have the war movies and that, you could tell how phony they are compared to what we have now. Technology has really gone a long way. But yet the actors, we don't have the actors we used to have. I mean, there's no more Cary Grants. What is it? Clark Gables.
There you go.
Well, George Clooney.
We got George Clooney. Wait, we got Denzel Washington out here. You know, some Michael B. Jordans. You know.
Yeah.
They're good, but they don't have the charisma. What's this? Oh, God. You know, it's terrible when you get old. You get brain dead.
Oh, no. It's not age. That's sleepiness.
Cary Grant.
There we go.
Yeah. There we go.
And, you know, and what actor that's out there now can pick up like a Cary Grant? Mm. Okay, George Clooney is kind of close, but he still doesn't have it. Myrna Loy and some of the female actresses.
Audrey Hepburn. That's what I think. Like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
I don't know if there's been another Audrey Hepburn.
Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm. And what was it? Rita Hayworth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Linda, some of them.
Linda, we got to run, but you are a movie connoisseur. Yeah, do you promise to call in every time we're hosting? Can you do that for us?
I'll try. We'll see. I'm still, after 20 years, I'm still on shift work.
Okay, we'll talk to your agent.
Night.
Linda from the Southeast Side, thank you so much for calling in tonight. We'll be right back in a moment with news on WGN.
Thought I'd end up with Shine, but it wasn't a match. Wrote some songs about Ricky, now I listen and laugh. Even almost got married. I'm so thankful. Wish I could say thank you to Malcolm, 'cause he was an angel. One taught me love, one taught me patience, and one taught me pain. Now I'm so amazing to have loved and I've lost.
Ariana Grande.
Yeah, that's my song.
Thank you, next. This is the song that makes Jerry smile in the morning.
It's Thanksgiving. Thanking your ex. That's perfect.
You know what? I gotta admit, I could see the song growing on me.
You were grooving to it.
I was. I tried to hold it in.
Yeah, I know, but you can't.
You can't.
You can't fight
man.
The ponytail.
You can't.
That pony. Oh my gosh, that long pony.
Something about that pony.
Yeah. Right. I was just seeing that photo of Cardi B's in Chicago right now. We were talking about her earlier, just off there. And she's got that long ponytail. She's got the Ariana. She's got a green ponytail.
Yeah, she's got the Verde Grande ponytail.
Right.
Yeah, she's down the street right now, apparently, schmoozing with some friends at Jerry right now. She just got done performing at the United Center for Big Jam, which was a big deal. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she's another one who makes songs that catch on and you see why people love them. But I haven't loved every single one of her songs the first time I heard it.
Right.
And Ariana, this Thank You Next. I know the more I hear it, the more I inch toward liking it a little bit.
She has a sing-songy voice when she talks. Like, she's like that, too. Like, she has that la la la. You know, she's just so adorable.
She looks so young, too. I thought she was much younger than she is. I mean, she's definitely a grown woman. I thought she was, like, eight. She looks 18 or something.
Right.
You know, 19. Yeah. College kid. But that line in the beginning where she says, one taught me patience, mm-hmm. one taught me, I can't remember the lyrics.
She learned a lot.
But there's a meme going around, or people are repurposing her lyrics and putting pictures of people in their lives. And some of them are even putting pictures of exes saying that one taught me patience, one taught me this, one taught me that. And that's how this song kind of took off as a viral sensation right now.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like when Taylor Swift talks about exes, I think it's very like, it sounds vengeful. And hers doesn't sound like it. It's like, I've learned. And then it, actually the lyrics go where she's focusing on herself instead of the exes.
I'm going to give this a deeper listen and not just write it off because it's poppy and dancey, sing-songy. Okay, so I see why that makes you happy, man. Mm-hmm. But look, we're talking about a moment ago about movies that didn't necessarily deserve a remake. And sparked from our conversation about The Lion King being remade from a cartoon to a CGI. And we're going through lists of movies and folks are calling in and texting in. We've got one text from 405. I don't even know what area code that is, but thank you for getting up with us and checking us out. It says, I like the remake of Ghostbusters, but it didn't have the heart of the original and didn't need to be remade.
Right.
What'd you think about the Ghostbusters?
They did the all-female cast.
So, yeah.
Right. I thought the most entertaining was the male the assistant.
The assistant. Ah, okay. Yeah, I do remember. Yeah.
So I thought he was really funny.
And who was the cast? It was Melissa.
It was Melissa McCarthy.
Melissa McCarthy, Leslie Jones from Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they used
Kristen Wiig. Was she in there too?
I believe so. Yeah. Yeah, it was.
She is hilarious to me.
She's great. She's really funny. That one. It kind of just went out the window. I think
Kate McKinnon, Kristen Wiig, Melissa McCarthy, Leslie Jones, they were in the Ghostbusters.
Kristen Wiig is so freaking funny to me. Kate McKinnon too, but Kristen Wiig, I don't know. I just see her and I start laughing. But something about the time and energy of the 80s when the first Ghostbusters came out, you can't
that cast
that movie at that time. I like the idea of it, especially because we don't see enough movies with all women leads, not just from the novelty, diversity thing, whatever like that.
Right.
It's genuinely interesting to see movies that just have things you haven't seen before. Mm-hmm. And so I had high hopes, but it was okay.
Well, like the Ocean's 8, Ocean's 11, all these different Oceans.
Yes.
And they remade it with all women this year. And that one didn't do very well, and I thought it was pretty entertaining, but
another
didn't go out.
Another one movie with all female leads that doesn't seem like it's doing well right now at the box office, but people are telling me it's a pretty good movie. Widows.
Yes, Widows. I just went to see that up at Old Orchard and at the CMX, you know, theater. It's so nice. Oh my gosh, that chair was so comfy.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to get out of it. And then they bring you, you know, a burger and fries. Like,
what theater is this?
Servers. CMX up at Old Orchard is where I saw it at.
Nice.
So you did have to fight the parking, which we were talking about earlier, to get in. But once you're inside, oh my gosh, I didn't want to leave.
But they're bringing you burgers and they have these comfortable chairs. They're asking you to fall asleep.
They have charging stations at the chair and
they're begging you to fall asleep.
Yeah. The servers come out and it's really, really nice.
Charging stations at the chair. So what was the movie like?
So it's set in Chicago, which I got to go to the International Film Festival and interviewed several of the cast members on the red carpet, and people like Viola Davis came in and I got to talk to her, and she said it's really, Chicago was another character in the movie. I mean, that was really fun to see all the different sites of Chicago and to guess what hotel they were in, or, you know, like little thing that they were in, the different neighborhoods. I mean, you can just see Chicago all over it, and Steve McQueen wanted to film here and they all came out to do it. And a great cast. Strong women. You know, it's about women settling up vendettas left by their husbands. So that's why it's called Widows.
How did And I had a feeling, I think I did know it was in Chicago because Brian Tyree Henry, I think his name is, mm-hmm. played an alderman.
Okay.
The dark-skinned African-American guy, heavy set.
Okay.
What was his character? Do you remember? You know who I'm talking about? What was his character? And the reason I ask about him, he was the lead in Atlanta, which is mm-hmm. Donald Glover's show. It's like a dark sci-fi comedy, eerie comedy. I love Atlanta. It's one of my favorite shows. And he's one of those actors that I really took a liking to. Yeah, Brian Tyree Henry.
Yeah.
And I'm curious as to how he did in the film.
Yeah, I'm looking. Yeah, he was good. Yeah, I mean, the cast is all really strong. I mean, they had Viola was just a powerhouse.
Without giving it away, what didn't you like about the movie? Because I get the feeling that you enjoyed it, but you mm-hmm. didn't love it because you like
it. It bounces around a lot. It's okay. It's a little hard to follow sometimes.
Okay.
Something about it was a little off, and so I understand that people do not enjoy it. I liked it. I had a good time. I didn't love it as much as I thought, though. I think my expectations were a little too high for it because I wound up, you know, I'd interviewed the cast before I saw it, so right. it's always better to like interview them after you saw it, so I could have, you know, spoke like specific things to them. There was a name, this woman, Cynthia Erivo. She yes. was in The Color Purple. So that's all I knew about her. So I just talked about Color Purple. But she's really good in the movie. Like, she's very strong, powerful. And it's a small part that she just takes and owns and battles it out with Viola. At one point, I was like, wow, she's good. Michelle Rodriguez was a blast to hang out with. She's just so much fun. I thought she would be different than she was. And she was, like, super fun to talk to. Steve McQueen. Talked about asking about where he stores his Oscar. I mean, I just, you know, on the red carpet, right, you can't really get into like deep questions. Liam Neeson actually came to the screening. And
is he dating Viola Davis?
No. Oh, okay. Her husband was with her.
Oh, okay.
He's a real nice guy. Yeah,
no, got it.
Her husband. No. But she said it was very important to have that kind of.
Sorry, that was fake news.
No fake news.
I don't know why. I saw a meme somewhere and it made me think they were actually dating. Fake
oh
news.
Yeah, no, they're not dating. But it was important to her. I saw her talk about being, you know, an interracial relationship, and mm-hmm. and she was going to wear different wigs and stuff. She had planned out all these wigs, and Steve McQueen's like, "No, you're going to do your natural hair," and nice. So that's what she did.
Oh, that's powerful.
Yeah. So she was really fun. I made her laugh, too. And,
did you?
Yeah. And I said, what are you doing next? And she's like, well, I got this, you know, this little show, how to, you know, get away with murder. And then and then she's like, I have this comedy. She goes, I'm really funny, but people just don't know it. And I was like, yeah, because she's so intense as an actress.
Right.
Know? But so that's awesome. I enjoyed it. But I like the behind the scenes, too.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So. How do you handle an interview, though, with the actors in a film that you didn't love, right? I mean, do you ask them, like, you know, why did this movie suck so bad? And I mean, you know, like, what do you say?
That's tough, because I did not like the Amy Schumer movie.
And then you interviewed her.
And
after?
Then I interviewed her.
How did
that? It was really, it was a stinker. I knew it was a stinker whenever I was, yes, it can be awkward. But here's the trick.
Okay.
They don't ask you. Usually, sometimes they will. They'll ask you if you liked it. But I didn't have a feeling she was going to ask me that. So she never asked me, so I didn't tell her. I didn't go into it going, hey, I didn't really like your movie. I mean, she never asked me. So
Right.
We didn't talk about that. We talked about other things.
So yeah. you just pivot totally. You just talk about totally other.
Like, yeah, I mean, but we mentioned some things, but oh my gosh, some of the performances were just painful.
Oh, and ouch.
Yeah.
Ouch.
So
it hurts for an actress, not to jump around a bit, but I'm just thinking about Amy Schumer, though. I hope it has to hurt for an actress who is vocal, is in the news a lot. I don't mm-hmm. pay particularly close attention to Amy Schumer, but I know mm-hmm. who she is normally because of maybe some dust up she may have had with someone on Twitter or just conversation. She's a voice.
Mm-hmm.
And usually you hope those people's product matches up to the voice and the personality of who they are.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's pretty interesting. She's, you know, she's doing some stand up here in Chicago. She's coming next year. The thing was, after interviewing her, she goes and talks to Oprah, and Oprah, like, they have, because Oprah gets a lot of time with her, okay? I got, like, 15 minutes. Oprah got, like, an hour, you know?
Right.
So they really get to know each other, and you really learn that she's, like, an introvert, and, you know, she doesn't like really shallow conversations. I was like, oh, like, you know, then it made me think about how what I ask, you know. And I was like, you know, I wish I could have that Oprah time and really got to know her in that way, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, you get to see the other side to them in some of these interviews. And they didn't talk about the movie much either. Isn't that funny?
They didn't.
Oprah probably didn't like that movie either.
So that means you have a good strategy. You don't like the movie, you don't talk about it.
Yeah, you just get, well, you talk about it, but just briefly, and you know, hopefully they don't ask, so you don't have to lie.
We're going to talk about a few more movies in a moment. It's Jerry Nunn. This is Dova T right here on WGN. Filling in for Dave Plyer tonight on WGN Radio, talking movies. Jerry Nunn has seen almost all of the ones that have come out recently that are worth seeing, pretty much. He saw Widows. Yeah. What do you give it out of 10?
Widows, I would a 7.
A 7, but you seem to recommend that people go see it. Would you say it's worth the money?
Yeah, definitely Chicagoans, I would think, yeah.
Yeah.
Strong cast, strong women in it, great.
And I just wanted to do well, because we were talking about women-led movies, and I don't want this narrative to pop out that they don't do well at the box office, because you know Hollywood is the creatures of habit. If things don't work, they don't do it again. Mm-hmm. And
well, there's actually a lesbian moment in the movie too. There's that, so there's visibility there too. There's a lot of diversity.
Word.
And we could, I mean, you know,
yes, diverse cast.
I think they're discovering too that the gay dollar is going farther. So we're seeing that too. We're seeing, you know, A Star Is Born. Okay, that was, you know, that was the gays supported that movie, you know, and Boy Erased, of course, is really making an impression, because gay conversion therapy is still out there. Okay. And it shows how many people were still affected by that. So
now walk us back a little bit. What is Boy Erased completely about?
It's about gay conversion therapy, where they go, where the parents of this boy sent him to a camp, and where he's trying to convert to be straight. They're a super religious family. And they reminded me of my parents so much.
Did they try to do this to you?
Like, they didn't. They did not. But I wasn't living at home when I came out. I think that they would have tried to find something. I mean, they would have definitely dragged me to church, you know? And Nicole Kidman just reminded me of my mom so much. And I called my mom and, like, told her, you know, and just did things that my mom did. And I was like, and I even tried to, like, I don't think my mom even gets it, you know? Like, she does not understand. And so I said, you know, she did this thing, or, you know, you don't put your arm out the window of a car because it'll get chopped off. And my mom's like, see, the mother's trying to take care of people, you know. So she only sees the mother's
perspective.
She does not even see the kid's side at all. But and then the father, you know, Nicole Kidman played that role. And it was really, Russell Crowe was the father, and he kind of reminded me. I got to talk to the director, Joel Edgerton, and he was he's a star in the film. And the guy that wrote the book, he's married, he has a husband in New York, and he came. So I got to hang out with both of them and just really discuss with them about all that. So,
that's so cool. So is this a true story?
It is based on
true events.
True events and everything. It's not completely accurate. I did get to ask some questions where they were like, oh, well, this was added in and things like that. Because I was like, did that really happen?
You know? Right, right.
So, you know, it's always good to get kind of the behind the scenes. But that Lucas Hedges, that actor is so good.
And that's the boy. That's the main character.
I knew he was going to be big, yeah. I knew it from when I saw, like, Lady Bird and Three Billboards, that this kid, he was in Manchester by the Sea. And this kid is so good. Yeah.
And with a movie really like good. this that you have you closely identify with, how authentic did it feel?
I didn't cry as much in this one as I did in Instant Family. Instant Family is this Mark Wahlberg movie, and I was really touched by that one because I was adopted.
Oh.
And so I guess I'm just more adopted than I am gay. I guess that's
where's the doom doop? That's the over here.
Yeah. And so I thought it was going to be the silly Mark Wahlberg movie. There you go.
There it goes. Super late. I didn't know it actually play on the air.
Hey, you got to remember that button.
You're right. I'm finding buttons over here. Okay.
Keep those buttons going.
Yeah.
But I thought it was going to be a silly Mark Wahlberg movie. And it was really touching about a father, a husband and wife that adopt three Latino kids all at once, and they're different ages. And, you know, going through the foster system, and I just identified so much as that little boy who was like this clumsy little boy that just wanted to be loved, and I was just like, oh,
wow.
Yeah, so it's really touching. It's actually very different. And they, so the movie company had me come out and intro the movie at the movie theater for like an early screening, and I got to tell my story about being adopted and everything. And then like the audience really, they talked about it afterwards, that they really liked me talking about that. And this guy said that it gave his gave him hope that his parents would find their adoptive parents, because wow. I found mine after 30 years. And so,
wow,
yeah, so it was great. And
that
then,
is heavy.
And then I, yeah, in the movie, I was trying to warn people, you know, well, it's, you know, I cried some, and then they're like, what? They thought it was a comedy. And I'm like, okay, I warned you. And this woman is crying behind me the whole time.
I'm sure.
Because there's just a lot of heartfelt stuff, but a lot of funny stuff, too.
We're deviating from the movie a bit, but you got to tell me about the experience of meeting your biological parents.
Oh, we have all night. Let's see. Okay.
Yeah, I know, right? I know.
That will fill the next hour. No, no. I mean, I was a closed adoption in the 70s. I was in Oklahoma City. And so I never thought I would find my birth mother at all. It's just really, it was something that I really wanted to do.
How did you make it happen? How did you do it? And what was, what did you feel was missing? And when you met her, did you feel like that void was filled?
Yeah. So my parents told me when I was very young. So I, so it kind of disconnected me from the family, honestly, is what really happened. Mm. But they, there's no perfect time to tell a kid that they're adopted.
Sure.
And so it was really tough for me. I would really distance myself from my family, the whole, just growing up and you know, when things didn't go well, well, you're not my real parents anyway. You know, it was that kind of moments with that. And, I mean, what was the worst adoption movie ever? Mommy Dearest would be the worst one, where she yells at her mom, you know, why did you adopt me and stuff? And then I tried that line. That line did not go over well with my mother.
Ouch.
And, you know, I just, it was tough for me. And I, so when I was 30 years old and I was already in Chicago, they changed the laws in Oklahoma, and they would let me contact her, and I got to send letters, and they would send a letter to her. And then, but we found out the agency was like reading the letters, me and my birth mother. And we're like, oh, we don't like that. So we got connected.
Directly.
So now, you know, and I talked to her on Thanksgiving this time, and it was, it's really important to me. I mean, she looks like me, acts like me. I mean, very, it's a pretty wild experience, because after 30 years, you know. And right. I think it worked out well that I didn't find her when I was young. I think that's,
sure,
you know, because I was my own person by 30 years old, and I could, like, deal with it. And
you could probably deal with her flaws that yeah. she had or whatever.
Yeah, I think she wanted me to be that son in a way, and I was like, you know, like, I already have my family, everything's good.
Right, right, right.
You know, this is not going to cross over, but it was so, so important for me.
So having had that experience and then watching a movie, I guess you felt like it was an accurate portrayal of what life as an adopted child felt like.
Yeah. I mean, their situation is different, you know.
Okay.
They were doing foster care with, you know, some older kids and stuff, and they had all their own issues. But, yeah, but it was just, it was so good.
That's good stuff. That's good stuff. Other movies we need to be looking at. What else is out here?
So we talked about, let's see, Bodied. It was one that got overlooked that I wanted
yes.
to tell you about. Yeah.
Okay, so Bodied was executive produced by Eminem.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about battle rap,
yes.
which is this culture where, you know, MCs, rappers get in front of each other, and whoever's the most creative with the wordplay and dissing the opponent. It's a competition. It's a sport. There are no third rails. You can say whatever it is you need to say to demoralize and vanquish your opponent. Mm-hmm. I used to be very skilled at this particular art form.
Really?
Oh, man. Yes. What? There is, if you Google long enough, there's a newspaper clipping of me somewhere winning a rap battle.
Oh, where'd you do them at? Where were they?
This was in high school.
Okay.
And so, I was an MC, and back in high school, somebody challenged you. You just dissed him, and you freestyle. You went off the top. It was all improvisational. You didn't go home and write anything about the person, which right now, battle rap is great right now, but it's mostly written because people putting together these really intricate, crafted rhymes. Back then, it was like somebody would just challenge you on a schoolyard at the lunch table in the cafeteria randomly. I'm better than you. What? Oh. And then it starts. You get a crowd gathered around, and you're just going at it. It gets
I could never
rush,
think
man.
In the moment like that. I think that would be so hard. Wasn't it hard to
No, it's just like radio. That's what taught me how to improvise.
What taught you how to fight back, right?
And how to fight back because I didn't know how to. We call it roasting, which is basically playing the dozens, talking about somebody back and forth, like you know, your mama so, your shoes so ugly, you know that whole thing. And so I didn't know how to do that, but I could if I could make it rhyme. Oh, I got you.
Wow. I mean, you must think on your feet so well. That's
awesome. You would think so.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. I'm not doing well right now because Curtis says I'm late to break. But when we come back, we'll talk about Bodied. And we'll also talk about this new study that came out about climate change and what scientists propose may be the key to reversing this potentially deadly trend right here on WGN.
When you feel weak.
Thanks, Roger.
You feel like you want to just give up. But you gotta search within you. Try to find that inner strength and just pull that shit out of you. And get that motivation to knock it. And not be a quitter. How bad you want to just fall.
Classic Eminem right here.
Yeah.
He was one of my favorite rappers for a time, man.
Wow, that's so cool.
Oh, man.
I thought he was like the vanilla
a gimmick.
Ice.
Yeah.
And I thought he is not going to. He's going to have one song and that's going to be it. And then it kept surprising me. He just kept doing more. And now he's like an icon. Now
he is.
I mean, playing Lollapalooza that time, I was like, wow. I saw him there and it was crazy.
Yeah. He's hit or miss with the albums as of late, though. His albums, the Slim Shady LP, his first album. Was great because he had the ability to put words together intricately. In that first song, my name is what? You wouldn't think it does sound like it'd be Fly By Night just to gimmick. Yeah. But with Dr. Dre, somebody as legendary as Dr. Dre backing you in on production, and just his skill as an MC and his respect for the craft. He's a rap nerd. So if you look at an Eminem interview, he can tell you what LL Cool J said in verse 2 of track 8 on his first CD. Like, he's one of those types. You know what I mean? So I think that plays into like the type of movies he produces. So that song, I think we heard that in the background of 8 Mile, which was out when I was in like 7th grade or 8th grade or something like that. That was like a real formative movie for me. And along those same lines of 8 Mile, Eminem produced this movie Bodied.
Yeah.
And he's not in it, but it's about battle rap.
Right.
And you saw it.
I saw it, and the Korean director is the big deal. He's done all kinds of music videos. He did for Eminem and all. I mean, he did the Toxic video. He's done Lady Gaga, and That Boy Is Mine is his video. I mean, come on. That is a classic.
The Boy Is Mine? Yeah. He did the Monica and Brandy?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
He's done Taylor Swift's, like, 1989 album. He was the big deal. And the stars, Callum Worthy was the main guy, and Jackie Long both came. So all three of them, and then me. So you have the Korean director.
Uh-huh.
You have a gay interviewer.
Uh-huh.
You have the little white nerdy guy that's the rap battle guy. And Jackie Long's the black guy. And it was just this really diverse table.
The United Nations of entertainment.
And they were concerned about me, about the gay stuff that's in the movie, and they were interested in what I thought about the movie instead of, so that was a moment that they did ask about what I thought of the movie, and I was like, oh no, it didn't bother me, stuff like that, you know, things that they said, but you know, because they show different sides of the arguments of all different. You just have to see the movie.
I mean, because hip-hop is mad homophobic, man. That's one of the problems with hip-hop, and especially rears its head in battle rap, because a lot of the most scathing lines are these intimations about, you know, that type of thing, usually said in a derogatory way. So when you're watching a movie and you're seeing this, what's going through your head?
I mean, it showed different sides of the argument. I mean, the girl has a girlfriend in there that defends the other side. So there's all that, you know, you're homophobic, da, 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 da. So you have people calling them on their stuff. So,
got it.
So that was in there and stuff. But you know what's interesting is last night, like, at 12:30 last night, I was at a show with a black gay rapper and from Chicago, and just talking about how people
young guy
out of the closet. Yeah,
I heard of him. I think I did. What's his name? Do you remember his name?
This is last night. Oh, I have to. They did a whole thing at Subterranean where there was a diverse group of all. I mean, they did every shade of the rainbow was there, and it was just awesome.
Because if it's who I'm thinking about, he's not only a black gay rapper, he's like a black gay gangster rapper.
Yeah,
he's like a drill rapper, like he's a tough guy.
Yes, yeah. So, had a great time last night, but it's interesting the whole culture and how that is. You know,
yeah,
but things are changing, I guess.
Yeah. So, but you enjoyed the movie, though.
Yeah, I did. I just got so overlooked. It just got ran over. That
nobody paid attention.
That's what
to this.
I talked to we hang out all the critics and stuff because we go to these screenings, and we're talking about how there's so much just hammered out at the end of the year, and everyone's trying to get all the movies out by the end, and people are overwhelmed, and movies are expensive, and they're not, people can't get to all the movies. And so there's so much coming out that movies are getting overlooked.
Yeah, when you got Creed 2 in theaters, you're not thinking about Bodied.
Right, and I went to the same night. I couldn't go to the Creed screening because I was at the Green Book, which was I thought it was just a little more on my style. So I went and saw the Green Book about the 60s pianist Don Shirley. Do you know about this true story?
No, I don't.
So he was a pianist that played, and he wanted to go out to these dangerous parts for black people to go out, and they had this Green Book that said where you could stay that was safe, where you could go to restaurants. And
I do know about this. Yeah. You said the Green Book all this time because I hadn't seen trailers for the movie. I haven't really seen it. I didn't possibly think that that was the Green Book you were talking about. Yeah. But the Green Book would tell you where it's safe for black people to go.
Yes, and Vigo plays his Italian bodyguard that drives him around and takes care of him. And how they come together, and it's just, I thought it was really good.
It's a good movie.
Yeah, that's why I went to that instead. I just thought it was a little more, up my alley. But yeah, that's out.
I like the premise for that movie too, because a lot of people didn't like, that in sundown towns where there were times where black people couldn't be out or else you'd be at risk of getting lynched and things like that. And I think that it's funny. There was this argument, especially among black folks, about there being too many slave movies out. So it was really, really reared its head during the time of 12 Years a Slave, Django, and there's a third that's escaping me right now. But it just felt like the images that we were seeing of ourselves, the movies that were winning the Oscars, the things that were getting the attention, seemed to be us being subjugated, even though it's a story of triumph and all of these other things were happening. A lot of black people kind of felt like, man, I'm tired of seeing this version of myself from 500 years ago. And just like Lion King, I think it's important to expose a new audience to the things that we know, because now we're adults and we know what America's history was like, but the kids don't.
Right, and I look at that. I mean, I'm not trying to tell people how to feel, because that's valid for what people want to say, but I think it's important to spotlight some of these moments in history. People didn't know about the Green Book. People did not know it probably existed.
People didn't know.
And, and so I think it's important to highlight stuff like this. Like The Hate U Give, I thought was an important movie this year. And Black Klansman was like the best movie that Spike Lee's put out in a long time. And
thank God for that, because Spike Lee had me concerned for a while.
Yeah, Chirac, I didn't like Chirac. You didn't like it either.
Oh yeah, it was terrible.
I thought it was the worst.
It was the worst.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I know. And I had to interview him. Talk about I was with the lead, and then we didn't talk about Chirac because I was like, I did not like it.
I enjoyed his interview very much with Val Warner, because she appears in Chirac, and I remember at the time he was on Windy City Live.
Okay.
And she kind of, it was somewhat of a contentious interview because she was pushing back. What do you say to people who say, she was just bringing up the criticisms of the film?
Yeah.
And I thought in that case, because it was such a hot button issue, such a hot button film, and so terrible, I think it was appropriate. But I know Spike Lee had it in him. So, and the Black Klansman, now this is a story about an undercover African-American police officer that pretends to be a white member of the Klan.
Right. So there's some humor in it. I mean, he really plays with them and has a lot of, you get to see his side. And yeah, I thought it was so good.
And so 1 out of 10, what do you give Black Klansman?
Oh, that would be like an 8.
Really?
Yeah.
Word. Okay.
Maybe even better. I mean,
I got to check that out.
Yeah. I really like that one. So yeah. Let's see, what else is really good? The Ben is Back is coming out too. There's two movies. So it's interesting how there's these trends of movies. Okay, so we talked about how Boy Erased as uh-huh. the gay conversion. There's another movie about that. There's like two this year. There's several movies about addiction. So Ben is Back is about. It's another one with Lucas Hedges in it. It's Julia Roberts trying to help her son deal with addiction. And then we got the one that Lisa had talked about earlier, the Steve Carell movie about dealing with his son's addiction.
Beautiful Boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So both of those movies came out at the same time. It's just interesting how the trend is with movies and
with films and stuff. I do think Hollywood has a good way of reading the tea leaves in a way, seeing where we are right now. The fact that even embodied in 8 Mile, there was no proxy character for the alternative perspective about homophobia in hip hop. There was no one pushing that,
right?
You know, pushing back against that. And so now, embodied, you can't have that movie without having that that perspective. And so it's interesting how movies are kind of like a microcosm of where society is right now. So I think that's why we're seeing these types of films.
Yeah, and they're dealing with the hard stuff, you know. So it's good.
Good stuff. Well, I'm not gonna lie, but and we're talking about this off air before we go to break. I'll end with this. You know, even along the lines of that argument about, you know, representation, even though we're seeing diversity in films, maybe it's the nature of the seriousness of my work and the fact that I read so many heavy news stories and a lot of heady stuff. I just don't feel like seeing a heady movie.
Right.
As good as I'm sure The Hate U Give is, I don't know if I want to see a movie where a black boy gets killed by the cops.
Right.
You know, I'm just
saying.
Yeah. But before
so
we go,
Lion King.
Let me go see Lion King. I will see Black Klansman though, because there's some humor in it. But what did you think of The Hate U Give?
So powerful to see it through that girl's eyes. So good. Just loved it. Yeah.
Good stuff. We'll be back in a minute. More with Doma T and Jerry Nunn. We're talking movies, and we've got a call from Jill in Des Plaines. She's talking about a documentary on Channel 11. What you talking about, Jill? And thank you for joining us.
Actually, it's really funny. It's on right now. So, you know, anyway. But I just happened to turn it. I saw this afternoon. I'm a PBS junkie. I have to admit that right there. But it's a documentary that they've been playing all day. And it's called The African Americans, Many Rivers to Cross. And it's the story of... the history of African Americans, like 1500 through present day, and how it's, you know, how they were brought over for slavery and everything, and how they, once they, you know, earned their freedom, well, not really earned their freedom, but they were freed, right? When they were freed, and then how, some of our U.S. governments, you know, depending on which party was in charge or which president was in charge, how they had much support, and then how, you know, the support was taken away.
Wow.
You know, like when, you know, so it's really powerful, and it's just, you know, I know it's taught in school, but I don't think it's taught as in depth as this whole point of view of the African Americans through history. It's just fascinating. So it's something to throw on your DVR.
I love it, because we were just talking about how important Jerry and I, about how important these films are to audiences who you know, haven't had these experiences, and we don't often talk in history about these experiences. And the funny thing about it, Many Rivers to Cross was produced by Henry Louis Gates. And that's the guy who, remember that beer summit, the first, during Obama's first presidency, where Henry Louis Gates came home and was accused of trying to burglarize his own home. A police officer tried to arrest him, and Obama was coming out in his defense, and it was a really tense time in race relations, and there ended up being a beer summit between Henry Louis Gates, then President Obama, and the police officer who arrested him.
Wow.
Having a conversation about what it means about discrimination and presidents' race. And Gates goes on to, and he was known for this work, but goes on to produce this documentary about these types of things, and it just brings back why these films are so relevant. So thanks for that, Jill, because I was talking to Jerry about how sometimes it's just so heavy, and I don't always want to live and think through those experiences, because my work rests so much on that experience. It makes it feel like I have to work, but you remind us that it's important that we watch these types of films. Not only are they good and enjoyable, but also educational. So that's dope. And you're watching it and listening at the same time?
Well, I just happened to turn it on because I'm like, what is the name? I just want to make sure I had the name correct. And then it's on. So it's just kind of funny. But it's really powerful, and it's really eye-opening because it's somewhat forgotten history.
Yeah. It's not taught in schools.
It was just really... it's just something that should be seen.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you for calling in. I appreciate that. That's Jill from Des Plaines talking Many Rivers to Cross. I appreciate that. And Jill, don't you turn that TV on. You mute it. You can keep it on, but mute it.
And
you keep
it.
On listening. Yeah, and record it. And watch it later. You keep on listening to us as we fill in for Dave Plyer here. But where were we? We were talking about movies, and we're wrapping up. I think we wrapped up on movies. And I wanted to tell you about this news story that I saw.
Okay.
That was really interesting. Roger, you can jump in and fill in the gaps in this news story for me if you can. But there's this study that came out of the White House on climate change. And as we know, our president is not a fan.
Right.
But mandate.
Does not believe it.
Does not believe it. Uh-huh. It's all a hoax, according to people of that ilk. Uh-huh. But this report is mandated by the government, mandated by Congress, and it came out Friday. Yeah. And it's a 1,600-page report that talks about the dire consequences of climate change. What will happen if we don't get a handle on global warming in some way? Roger, did I miss anything?
The White House had to legally release it, but they tried to release it when everyone was worried about what was being sold on Black Friday. That was the slam against the release time and date. They claimed the White House tried to hide this on Black Friday. And, of course, the media jumped all over it. And then the president responded to his own government's own report, saying that the report showed the extremes, not what might happen, just if you took it to the furthest extreme. That was his criticism of it. Mm-hmm. And he basically said, don't worry about that report.
Oh, wow.
Right. And to his credit, the report does talk about multiple scenarios, and it does talk about the extremes, but it also assesses what's happening right now. And it was produced, the research and all of this was done, and it was written before these devastating fires in California. But the California wildfires are due in part to global warming and climate change. The conditions right now have worsened the situation. And so, now scientists are talking about ways to combat this. And you have these green initiatives, the gas house emissions, like we're reducing greenhouse gas emissions. I say gas house emissions. I've been saying that all show. Chalk it up to being late. I'm just realizing I've been saying that. I mean, greenhouse gas emissions as leading causes of global warming. But there's this new idea about dimming the effects of the sun, basically dimming the sun.
Yeah. Huh. And we've been talking about how we need sun, right?
Yeah.
We've been talking about that all the time. Yeah.
When I saw that report, I'm thinking, what are they going to do? Are they going to put a giant shade between us and the sun? And we'll just kind of pull it down during the daytime? Like one of those room darkening shades?
Right.
Or are they going to build this glass shield all the way around the earth? And your glasses, when it gets real sunny out, they darken automatically.
Mm-hmm. You get into sci-fi territory.
Yeah. I just don't understand what crazy scientists, and that's weird coming from me because I believe it's in science stuff. But what crazy scientists is thinking they want to dim the light?
Well, I'll tell you how. Oh, so it's a little different. So CNN has been getting some flack for this because the headline, which I chose the CNN story because the headline is interesting. It says, dimming the sun, the answer to global warming. And what they actually want to do, the technique would involve releasing sulfate particles into the Earth's lower stratosphere. And you would have to build these special planes that would fly high up into the stratosphere, and then release these sulfate particles. And what they do is when these particles become a part of the atmosphere, they diffuse the effects of the sun's rays. And so we won't be able to see it. These aren't particles that we can see with our vision, but it would take a coordination between all of the world's powers and all of these, you know, the G20 countries would have to come together and decide how they want to go about this. And so they would have to put hundreds of planes into the atmosphere to every so often release these particles, and they would dim the effects of the sun.
They have a lot of money, too. Where's the money going to come from?
It costs remarkably low, according to these Harvard and Yale scientists. They say it carries running costs of $2.25 billion a year over a 15-year period.
Oh, so you got a payment plan.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay.
They do stress that this is hypothetical.
Right.
And they're not saying that it is totally feasible, because G20 countries would have, it's hard to get them to agree on anything.
Right.
But they're saying it's just something to explore and think about as we also look toward reducing greenhouse gas emissions. And then the other piece about this is that it may have adverse effects in terms of crops.
Oh, exactly. Here we go.
And all of that stuff.
That was the other thought that I had, is how it doesn't matter how it'll affect us, how will it affect the environment?
Yeah.
You know, the rainforest, how will it affect rain? How will it affect the crops? How will it affect a whole bunch of other things that we depend on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, how things are going, it's not like everyone's going to agree on all this together. Yeah. So good luck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good luck with that.
I think we'll leave it up to the kids, right, Domathy?
The kids are the future. These kids, they're crazy science, want to dim the sun. It's probably a good idea. I don't know. Who knows? I don't even know what half that stuff meant. I was just reading it. We'll be back with news in a minute on WGN.
Hey, Luke. May the force be with you.
It was you, Kristen, who shot J.R.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Ah! We're not gay! Not that there's anything wrong with that.
John's been waiting a long time to take the reins.
My name is Dave Letterman. Last night, I became a father. Thank you very much.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
For the third time in six seasons, it's one goal achieved.
Okay.
The Chicago Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup. The Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup.
It's in time. And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series. The Cubs have done it.
Now, this is history.
You're going to need outstanding hosts.
With Dave Plyer.
It's a guy, but I love you.
And Dave Schwann on 720 WGN.
And filling in for one of those Daves, because we have big shoes to fill. We needed 4 feet to do it. It's me, Domathy Fuggo, and Jerry Nunn. This Week in History, a staple on the Dave Plyer Show on Sunday mornings. And as always, Dave Schwann joins us to talk about these things that happened in history throughout this week. And
good morning, Domathy.
And good morning,
Jerry.
To you.
Good to see you again.
How you doing, Dave?
Good. Good. Hope you had a good Thanksgiving.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving to you. I got a chance to see a lot of Dave this week, by the way.
And, yeah, I know I'm going to get to see you. Thursday and Friday.
Yeah, it's been fun.
You're here when I'm not, and I'm here when you're not, usually.
Exactly. Exactly. So when we get to cross paths, it does mean a lot.
It's always
fun. Yeah, This Week in History. You want to kick it off?
Yeah. So This Week in History, November 25th, 1783. At the end of the Revolutionary War, the last British troops left for New York City. They left New York City.
I wasn't there.
Okay. Before your time.
Before 1783. So at the end of the Revolutionary War, the last British troops left New York City. That's a trip. I thought that would have happened much sooner, like the British leaving anyway.
It was 8 years. The Revolutionary War was 8 years long.
Wow.
It was 8 years long, and New York City was also the site of the first inauguration. Washington, D.C. wasn't done yet, so George Washington took the very first oath of office
in New York City in a building that is now across the street from the New York Stock Exchange. That is a fascinating area to be in, the whole Wall Street area there. And then you get an idea of how old New York City is. That is an old, old city, much older than Chicago. As a matter of fact, it was not New York City when it was first named. It was called New Amsterdam because it was formed by the Dutch.
You see that? He's a human encyclopedia, he's got man. It. He's got it, man. Let's keep it going. November 24th, 1859.
I wasn't there either.
Charles Darwin's book on the origin of species by means of natural selection was first published, theorizing that all the living creatures descended from a common ancestor. And so that's when we first got this theory of natural selection. That's when we, is this the... The common ancestor, is this the ape? Is this what this comes from?
Well, I guess a number of different things, you know. It still is because it's called the theory of evolution. And Darwin was out on an island and saw some species that had been isolated for, you know, how many centuries, millennia, and kind of formulated this idea during a stay somewhere in remote islands and came back and wrote about it. By the way, his father was a minister, so, you know, he had some religious background.
Got it. Wow. What's so interesting, too, about I like the idea of natural selection, well, the theory of it, outside of the context of science. I really like how it applies to sports or business or just this idea that the strongest win. The problem is when you're on the losing end of the stick, it self-perpetuates this idea that you're there because you deserve to be there. You know what I mean? It's like, you weren't good enough and that's why you're there. You know, so some people kind of misuse Darwin's theory in other sectors, but it's really interesting, man. You want to take 1940? Go ahead.
That origin of species reminds me of the movie Party Girl when she's a librarian and they go, do you know where the book Origin of Species is? And she goes, oranges and peaches, it's over there. Like, she doesn't get it at all. That's what it reminds me of. Next one, 1940. Woody Woodpecker debuts with release of Walter Lanza's Knock Knock.
Now, this is a good example of a cartoon I'm glad was remade, or else I would not have known of Woody the Woodpecker from my childhood.
I remember watching Woody Woodpecker as a cartoon show when I was a kid.
Yeah,
me too.
I think it was Channel 9. Roger is still here. Maybe he'll agree with this. Roger, they had one night it was Woody Woodpecker, another night it was Huckleberry Hound,
yes,
and Bullwinkle and Rocky. Yeah, a different cartoon series like that every night of the week. So postponed homework.
Every night. Now you weren't around for 1940, though.
No. But that Woody Woodpecker song, that was a hit back then.
Yeah.
In the 40s and 50s. That was a hit record.
Wow, that's so funny to think about.
It continues too. I mean, the fact that it rings true for I got nostalgic too. Like, yeah. And I think Dave, before you came in, we were talking about the remake of Lion King and all of these movies that were formative.
Remake already of Lion King.
Right.
It's not that old.
Right. But what about Woody Woodpecker? Why can't we have a live version of that with like Jay-Z? I mean,
they kind of laugh the same.
I need to sell that.
Right.
That's more sounds like Elmer Fudd than Woody Woodpecker.
It's hard to do that impersonation, impression, yeah.
That's hilarious. Let's see. 1943, November 28th, the Tehran Conference began, attended by President Franklin D. Roosevelt, British Prime Minister Winston Churchill, and Soviet Premier Joseph Stalin. Among the major topics discussed, a second front in Western Europe resulting in D-Day, the seaborne invasion of Normandy in northern France on June 6th, 1944.
I had a friend whose father was in that invasion. The
really?
D-Day invasion, yeah. And he said nothing about it until I asked him once, because I had two uncles also in World War II, but I asked him once, you know, what all were you involved with in the war? And he just looked at me and said, Dave, I landed at Normandy on D-Day. I thought, oh, wow. Wow. I never knew that before. But my friend and his father both went to Normandy, the beach, for the 40th anniversary when President Reagan was the master of ceremonies there. That was 1984. They both got to go, and my friend has some incredible pictures of that day. It was just awesome.
I can only imagine. Yeah. When you ask folks about the war, because I don't get a chance to bump into too many guys in the war. I did talk to some Tuskegee Airmen.
Would have some stories to tell.
Oh, my God, do they? But then sometimes they're really pensive and guarded about their experiences in the war. Your friend, was his dad guarded about that information, or was he open?
Not really. He just didn't really brag about it or talk about it much. And I, you know, talked to him a little further about the, you know, what happened leading up to it. And he was just very straightforward. He just said, we got our orders and we went. Hmm. That's one of the reasons why they call those people the greatest generation. Mm-hmm. And they are. And we're losing more and more of them, you know, as time goes on. Because now, you know, many of them are in their 90s.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that he was not really guarded about it. Some people are. Everybody reacts differently to a situation like that.
I'm sure.
But, you know, the Tuskegee Airmen had a lot to deal with. And not just, you know, being in the field of battle. There are amazing stories in that group of people.
I'm sure.
All right. Well, 1949, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer appears on the music charts.
Gene Autry.
Yes.
Yes. You knew that right off the bat. Another one I'm glad was remade.
Dancer and Prancer and Vixen, Comet and Cupid and Donner and Blitzen. But do you recall the most famous reindeer of all?
Hit it, Curtis!
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Is he dancing in there?
Had a very shiny nose.
If you're expecting me to sing, you're horribly mistaken.
Ever so, you would even say it glows.
All this makes me feel like Christmas is here.
I love the Rankin Bass stuff. Like, I love all him that. Names.
They never let poor Rudolph join in any reindeer game.
He was bullied.
I was just going to say, this story was really good, though. I was bullied as a kid. Everybody goes through some form of bullying, but when you go through it and you got somebody, I'm like, well, I made no special like Rudolph. Yeah. It makes you feel better.
Rudolph could have just said, oh, you've made fun of me all this time and now you need me?
Yeah, now, I'm out.
You're on your own.
That would have been me, but Rudolph was a much better man than I, and he wasn't even a human.
Good luck. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
I love those Rankin Bass shows, like all those Frosty and Rudolph, and I love all that.
Does something to you? Does it make you feel like the holidays are here? Does it
definitely.
That same way I feel, man. When I hear that, I'm like, wow. Mm-hmm. Let me see. I want to skip ahead a little bit. You guys mind if I skip ahead a little bit
next
here? Ringo Starr becomes the third former Beatle to earn a solo number one hit when Photograph tops the Billboard Hot 100 on November 24th, 1973.
Now you're bringing back high school memories for me.
There we go. Had to skip ahead. So what was Dave Schwann doing when this song came on?
Let's see, 73. What was the date again?
November 24th.
Yeah. I was a junior in high school.
Really?
Yeah. I was, you know, doing what juniors in high school do, hanging out with your friends and figuring out what you're going to do with your life. But this brings back memories of a girlfriend at the time and stuff like that. He also had a big hit called It Don't Come Easy.
Mm. Yeah, it says the man who replaced Pete Best on drums in the Beatles in 1962 once famously proclaimed of his role in the group that he was just happy to be here. But just because he was willing to act the part of the blindly lucky tag-along on the Beatles' gravy train doesn't mean that it was true. Ringo Starr's quietly spectacular drumming laid a foundation for the Beatles' revolutionary sound.
I feel sorry for Pete Best, though.
Why's that?
Oh, look what he missed out on.
I know it.
And he had to watch that, you know, the group that changed music. And he was part of that originally. And you know, he was removed just before it all exploded. So he saw that, you know, from the sidelines.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the best.
I know that Paul McCartney and their producer, George Martin, who had such a huge role in the sound of the Beatles, actually apologized to him later for saying, well, we're going to replace you with this guy. He goes by Ringo. His name's Richard Starkey. Richard Starkey, or Sharkey is his real name.
Mm.
And then less than a year later, the Beatles are everywhere.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Iconic.
Okay.
That's wonderful.
Let's see. We have Jack Ruby kills Lee Harvey Oswald at 12:20 in the basement of the Dallas police station. The alleged assassin of President John F. Kennedy
that
is shot.
55 years ago yesterday or today? I think it was yesterday.
November 22nd, it says.
Yeah. Well, that's the assassination.
Right, yes, yes.
Yeah, that was the assassination. That was Friday, so Sunday, that would have been the 24th.
Correct.
That was when Jack Ruby, and everybody saw that on live TV. That was stunning.
Here it comes. Now the prisoner wearing a white sweater.
Let me have it. I want it.
Being let out by Captain Prince. There is a prisoner. There is Leon.
He's been shot. He's been shot. Lee Oswald has been shot. There's a man with a gun. Absolute panic. Absolute panic here in the basement of Dallas Police Headquarters. Detectives have their guns drawn. There is no question about it. Oswald has been shot at point-blank range, fired into his stomach.
He is shot. Oswald, he is shot.
It is Oswald.
I get chills listening to this.
Mm-hmm.
Schwann, what was it like at that time?
Well, I was only seven,
mm-hmm.
but... as I explained the other day when I was talking about it with Dave on Thursday morning, you, as a young boy, you realized that something very, very serious was up, because all of the adults around you were very, sober or crying. And they sent us home from school early that day, that Friday. And then Sunday, I actually do remember being in our living room watching that. And everybody was, you know, stunned by the fact that the president had been killed. And now the man who was accused of being his assassin is shot on live TV. That was a live... The assassination itself was not on television, but Oswald's shooting was. And that just... You know, just was beyond belief. Really, still is. That's 55 years ago.
Wow.
I have a hard time dealing with that.
55
Did you see the Stephen King miniseries that he did about that date? It was called 11/22/63. It was really good.
I remember hearing about it.
Yeah, it was a different take on it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we talked about Stephen King earlier, so.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, heavy stuff. I'll read a little bit more on this just to wrap this up. It says Oswald was brought to the basement of the Dallas Police Headquarters on his way to secure county jail. A crowd of police and press with live television cameras rolling gathered to witness his departure. And Jack Ruby emerged from the crowd and fatally wounded him with a single shot from a concealed .38 revolver. Ruby, who was immediately detained, claimed that rage at Kennedy's murder was the motive for his action. Some called him a hero, but he was nonetheless charged with first degree murder. I can't imagine being 7 years old and seeing that on TV.
And he died in jail. Jack Ruby did.
Oh, wow.
He died in jail.
Last one, November 25th, 1987. Today is the anniversary of the death of Mayor Harold Washington, the city's first African-American mayor.
That I remember very well. As a matter of fact, Roger, step over here for a minute. Roger was working at City Hall at the time, Harold Washington's death.
I had stopped working for Harold at the time. I had moved on. I left just before his reelection. But I had worked for Alt Miller, the press secretary, who found Harold in his office, slumped over. He had come down to talk to him about something and found Harold. And it's strange the way that the mayor's office is set up. Just to the, if Harold is sitting at his main desk, just to his right is the doorway to his security force. They're sitting in the next room. They didn't hear him slump over, hit the desk. They didn't hear any noise. And when Alton Miller walked in, that's how he found the mayor. It was very strange.
Okay.
Wow.
Right. So
wow.
That's been 31 years, something like that. Yeah.
And 1987, that is history, man. Schwann, always a pleasure doing that with you.
Okay, you too, guys. And thank you.
Yeah, thank you. We'll go to break, and then we'll hear Walter Jacobson's perspective.